So what should we speak about? There are many things that could be discussed. What is the central point? What is the purpose of life? This should be considered. Otherwise, there are so many things we could discuss. What are the problems facing students today? Well, you can make a big list out of that, isn't it? Then when you graduate from student life, then you come to working life, and then you'll think, what are the problems facing professional people today? And then you come to retired life, and you say, what are the problems facing elderly people today? And then you come to the smashan, and you may think all problems are finished, but it's not all finished. Then you just get a new set of problems. So, the real question should be, ki ami kene amai jare ta patroi? These are two questions, ideal questions, which were put by the great devotee Sanatana Goswami to Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Sanatana Goswami was the most intelligent person. He was so intelligent that in his youth he was forcibly engaged as what we would nowadays call the prime minister. Actually, it's the same Pradhan Mantri. I suppose you'd say the same thing. Though he was born in what we would call a Hindu family, but he was forcibly engaged in the government of Nawab Hussain Shah, who was the Emperor of Bengal. He was there for some time and then he ran away. And he met Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, who is Sri Krishna Chaitanya Radha Krishna Hayanya Jagat Guru Gaura Mahaprabhu. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is Krishna combined with Radha. He is Jagat Guru. He is the Guru of everyone. So he is the right person to ask from. And Sanatana Goswami was intelligent enough to ask the right question. Most people don't even know how to ask the right question. They're trying to solve problems, but they're trying to solve the wrong problem. There's a story. One woman was walking in the forest carrying a big pile of twigs on her head. You don't do that. I never did that either. But still, in the forest in Karnataka, there must be so many women who they go in the forest, they collect all fallen down twigs, gather it up, put it on their head, isn't it? You haven't seen because you're all from the cities. But if you go in the village, you'll find that still today, many village women, they do this. They gather a big pile of firewood, twigs for burning in the fire, put it on their head. So it's very heavy. They're strong enough to carry it. We can't do that. You can pay so much money to go to the gym and all this, but you won't be strong enough. But these village women, they just eat a little, I don't know, ragi or rice or something. They're very strong. So there's a story, one woman was carrying a big pile on her head, and it dropped down. It's very difficult to get back. If you fall, it's very difficult to get on your head, and then when you're already tired from carrying it, if it falls down. She said, oh, Govinda, Govinda, Govinda. She was pious enough to call the name of Govinda. So Govinda came and said, yes, what do you want? She said, please put this back on my head. He said, okay. And he left, and she walked with the firewood on her head. So she could have asked anything. Govinda means Who gives pleasure to the senses? So she could have asked for mukti. She could have asked for unlimited material opulence. She could have asked for the opportunity to serve Govinda eternally. She asked, please put this pile of wood on my head. She solved her problem. Her problem was that she dropped the firewood. But she didn't have the intelligence to consider that this is not my real problem. This is an immediate problem, but it's not the main problem. Another example is given that someone goes to a king and then it's very difficult to get darshan with a king. So you meet the king and he says, yes, what do you want? Please give me a pile of ashes. So ashes are not very useful, is it? You can use ashes for cleaning pots. Nowadays you have to spend money and use some chemical. But previously people used ashes. It's more efficient. And free also, because people burn wood. So ashes are free. So if you ask the king for something which is available anywhere, then you're a fool. There's another story of the... In Bengal, it's quite common. There are many rivers with strong currents. So if the boat has to go against the current upstream, then often you'll find that men with long rope, they'll be pulling the boat. You have to be very strong to do that. Then you don't need to go to any gymnasium. So someone is walking along barefoot, and it's very hot and very hard work, and the ground underneath him is uneven and full of stones, and he's thinking, if I ever got some money, more than the small amount I get for pulling this boat, then I would make this path all smooth so that my feet would not hurt when I'm pulling the boat. If he got more money, then he didn't think I have to stop pulling the boat. But he just thought how I would make it more smooth, the path. So in this way, we're thinking how we will solve our problems. Problems that students face today. What are some of the problems students face today? Not enough money. I don't have enough money. Everyone has that problem. Even Bill Gates has that problem. Because no one ever has enough money. Not enough money. Too much pressure of studies. There's another problem. Not good enough facilities in the hostels. And so on and so on and so on. Incompetent teachers. The syllabus is not practical, and so on and so on and so on. These are the problems. But the real problem is that this whole material world is full of suffering. Therefore, Sanatana Goswami asked, Ke ami? Who am I? Kene ame jare tapatra? Why am I suffering three kinds of miseries? Is something you can learn, something more important than you're learning in college. Three kinds of miseries. In Bhagavad Gita, Lord Krishna describes this material world as dukhalayam, a place of suffering. So those sufferings, they have been categorized into three categories. Adhyatmic suffering that is caused by one's own body and mind. So like that, backache, headache, these are physical pains, all kinds. In the summer we tend to get rashes, and in the winter, which in Mangalore there's not really any winter, but those of you who are from North India or Bangalore, you know what is winter. So in the winter then we feel very cold, and we get pain in the body. And you can also get rashes from dried, cracked skin. So these are sufferings caused by the body, and then by the mind, anxiety, tension, anger, hatred, love. Love is also a problem, not just hatred. So-called love in this material world means attachment that binds us in this material world. We feel that we love someone. And that is a kind of disease. They say love sick. Someone is love sick. And actually they can become sick, physically sick, because of love, so-called love. So adhyatmik, adhibhotik. Adhibhotik means miseries caused by others, humans and non-humans. So other humans give us misery by speaking harshly to us or maybe beating us physically, or the mosquito is biting, the dog may bite or bark and keep you awake at night. So other living beings are causing problems. And adidaivik means what we would nowadays call natural disturbances, but it actually, material nature is administered by the demigods, devatas. So too hot in the summer, too cold in the winter, too much rain, not enough rain, cyclone, tsunami, earthquake. These are all examples of adidaivik klesh. So Sanatan Goswami asked, who am I? Why am I suffering the threefold miseries? Now, they don't teach you these things at the college, nor do they even encourage you to even think about these things, because they're cheating. In this material world, the business of everyone is to exploit and cheat everyone else. So in the name of benefiting you by giving you a so-called good education, they're simply cheating you by inculcating the misunderstanding that the purpose of life is simply to get a job and get money and work hard and die, and that's it, and so-called enjoy yourself. So, in this way, everyone is cheating everyone else. Hare Krishna. It's too much for some people to listen to. But it's a fact. Because if we're simply concerned with this life, then, and we avoid the question of what is the ultimate purpose of life, why are we suffering, how can we get free from all suffering, then we're living in a fool's paradise. Fool's paradise means we think we are very happy, but actually we're suffering and we're destined to suffer more and more and more. Just like the goat may think, or the chicken may think, I'm very happy. Every day they bring me nice food and I'm becoming very fat and healthy. So he's living in a fool's paradise because he doesn't know that he's being fed so that one day the person who's feeding will come and cut his throat. So in the same way, the whole society, what they tell, it's good for us, it's good for you to get a good job and a good degree, all this kind of thing. A college degree means you have to work very hard to get it, and it's a certificate which gives you the opportunity to work hard all your life for what you don't know, for what is the purpose of life you don't know. You're suffering, and then you die, and then you're born again, and you suffer again. So what was the purpose of life? What did you gain? We're not educated as to what is the actual purpose of life. And in modern society, we're encouraged to do all kinds of things which are sinful and which cause, therefore, more and more severe karmic reactions. So what is sin? Of course, there are many kinds of sin, but meat-eating, gambling, illicit sex, intoxication, these are sinful. Every action has a reaction. It's true. Not only on the level of measurable energies, but it's true on the karmic platform too. We can't slaughter millions of animals and think there won't be any reaction. Or intoxication, that's also sinful. They say, have a good time. Take alcohol. Actually, no one's happy on alcohol. But there's a euphoria, but it's sinful because it causes kam, krodh, lobh, moha, mada, matsarya to increase. And also, it severely hampers our consciousness, pulls our consciousness down to a very low level, and covers the purpose of life. What is the real purpose of life? The purpose of life begins with this question: who am I? Why am I suffering? We should think how to get free from suffering. No one wants to suffer, isn't it? Anyone like to suffer? Anyone likes to suffer, then we can get a lati and smash it on your head if you like to suffer. But no one likes to suffer. We're all trying to get free from misery. That's why we think, I'll work hard, then I'll get a nice job and a good car and a good apartment and all this. But it doesn't actually free us from suffering. Or if we think, I'll get all facilities, I'll get a washing machine and air conditioning and all these things. But it doesn't actually bring happiness. We're foolish to think that these things bring us happiness, but they don't. In America, for instance, all these facilities are there. Most people have got all these. I mean, everyone has a car, even if they're so-called poor. So all the facilities are there, and all kinds of channels, TVs, internet, this, that, but people are miserable, isn't it? And India also, with the so-called progress which is going on. But along with the so-called progress, there's more suicides, more drug addiction, more murders, more psychological disorders. Practically 30 years ago in India, we didn't hear of psychological disorders. Now it's normal, common, especially among the students. I mean, there were crazy people, but not in the present way, where all the, like, schizophrenia and manic depression and all these things. These are all coming in. So you may think, well, this is a very pessimistic picture. Yeah, but it's realistic. These are facts. That for all it's advertised that life is very wonderful and everything is very nice and enjoy yourself, but no one's enjoying, no one's happy. And the more you try to enjoy yourself according to the modern idea, go to parties and bars and discos and have girlfriends and boyfriends, but the more people simply become miserable, depressed, and empty and lonely inside. So the real solution should be looked for. That I want to be happy. Everyone wants to be happy. But where is the happiness in this world? Kim sukham marcha dhaminam. Where is the happiness in a place that is full of death? At the end is simply death. Fool's paradise. The chicken is thinking, I'm very happy, but his throat will be cut. So we're in a fool's paradise. How can we be happy? But if we know how to ask the right questions, then we can get the solution. There is an ultimate solution. The solution is not have electric fans to get free from the heat, and in the winter have hot water heater. All right, those things are there. We can use them, but that doesn't solve the ultimate problem. The ultimate problem is how to get free from the miseries of this material world and come to that state of eternal, unlimited bliss, which does exist. Those who are atheists and skeptics, they say, oh, no such thing exists. They have no information of it, or they don't want to accept information of it. But there is information. In the Vedic literatures, there is description of a place we can go to in spiritual bodies where we don't have to get born again, where there is eternal bliss in the service of Krishna. That is called Golok Dham. Have you heard of that? You've all heard of Golok Dham? I don't know nowadays. Previously, in India, people used to know, at least they used to hear of these things. But now, people, they don't grow up with Bhagavad Gita and Srimad Bhagavatam. They grow up hearing, what, about film stars and movie stars and politicians. And hearing about such people is inauspicious. Hearing about Krishna is auspicious because that is reality. Cricket stars come and go. Film stars come and go. They have nothing of any substance, nothing tangible to offer us. But Krishna is eternally there. Your parents, grandparents, great-grandparents, generations and generations, they're hearing about Krishna, and Krishna is being discussed all over the world. Why is that? Because Krishna is reality. Krishna is permanent. Krishna is eternal. Generations change. Cultures change. Languages change. But Krishna is reality. And he stays the same. And Krishna is always happy. Because that is the nature of reality, is to be happy. That's why we want to be happy. Why do you want to be happy? The atheists, they cannot explain this. They say, there's no God, there's no soul, there's no Atma, and everything has come into being simply by chance. Everything is simply matter. The body is simply a combination of matter, and there's nothing more than that. It's true, the body is simply a combination of matter. But where does this matter get the incentive from to try to be happy? How can matter have feelings of happiness or distress or anything else? Matter doesn't have feelings. You can program a robot that if you put some lassie in the robot's mouth, the robot can recognize and it will say, this tastes very nice. You could probably train a robot program a robot to do that. You could maybe even program the robot to say that this lassie is too sweet. It could immediately, with its imitation tongue, make a chemical analysis of the sugar content in the lassie and say it's too sweet. And we might think this robot is conscious, but actually it's not. It's not experiencing the sweetness. If we drink lassie, We don't make a measurement of the sugar content, but we can experience it's too sweet or not sweet enough. So we could program a robot to say, I see a red light. But it doesn't mean that there's in that robot there's any entity which actually sees, has the experience of seeing anything. It's not conscious. So consciousness is the symptom of the soul. And the nature of consciousness is Satchidananda, eternal, full of bliss and knowledge. Therefore, we desire not to die, because by nature we are eternal. Therefore, we desire to know. Why do we desire to learn? Because it is the nature of the soul to be knowledgeable. Why do we desire to be happy? Why do we distinguish between happiness and distress? Because it is the nature of the soul to be eternally and fully happy. So, therefore, Sanatana Goswami asks, why am I suffering? That's the real question. It's not how can I get rid of one suffering. Because the nature of this material world is that we try to solve one problem and we simply create another problem in doing so. Just like we might think that to go from Mangalore to Udupi takes too much time. If you have to walk, takes too much time. So, alright, now they invented motor cars. And you can go within 1.5 hours. And once they build a highway, maybe in 1/2 an hour. But then there are other problems. Traffic accidents. Pollution. 50 rupees a liter. That's also a problem, isn't it? You have to work damn hard to get the money and, you know, 1,000 rupees. What happened? Well, that's just, you know, driving to Bangalore or something. Then digging up from the sea. Someone has to go out in the sea. Ugra karma, this is called. Unnecessary hard work. And sometimes the oil rig catches on fire, or and so many people are killed. That happened, what, 1 year ago, something like that, off Bombay. There's a fire on the oil rig. Dayal Nitai was telling me, he was going back and forwards in the ship, bringing dead bodies and half-dead bodies. Now the half-dead bodies would have gone out by helicopter. So there are so many. Then pollution of the air, pollution of the sea. So many problems. So we solve one problem, but we created so many other problems. So the really intelligent thing would be to get free of all problems forever. And they think, well, that's not possible. Well, we say, yes, it is possible. But you have to find out how to do that. And that's what Bhagavad Gita is all about. Arjuna had a problem. You know the story of Bhagavad Gita? Arjuna was about to fight. It's a long story how the fight came about. The whole Mahabharata. Long story how the Pandavas under Yudhishthira, they were ruling the kingdom, and then by unfair means they were banished from their kingdom for 12 years plus one. Then they came back and said, okay, let's have the kingdom back. And the Duryodhana and company said, forget it. We're not giving you anything. We're not going to give you as much land as you can stick one pin into, let alone a kingdom. Forget it. So then it came to a battle. There should be a fight. And just as the fight was about to begin, all the armies lined up, and Arjuna said to Krishna, who is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, but who was present, apparently in human society, as one of the many princes lined up on the battlefield. He wasn't fighting, he'd taken the position of Parthasarathi, the charioteer of Arjuna. So Arjuna told Krishna, I don't want to fight. Why should I fight? And on the other side, it's all our relatives and gurus. And he gave so many arguments for not fighting. He said that, well, first of all, why should we fight with these people? They may be wrong, but to fight with them, two wrongs don't make a right. And then if everyone will be killed here, all the kshatriyas will be killed, and then all the women will be unprotected. There'll be no strong men to protect them, and then that'll cause more chaos. They'll be exploited. And he gave many good-sounding reasons why not to fight. And then Krishna explained the whole Bhagavad Gita, that Arjuna was trying to solve one problem that would be caused by fighting. But what Krishna explained is that this is only one problem. It's a big problem to you. But there's a bigger problem that everyone faces, that this whole material world is full of misery and we can't avoid it. Now that doesn't mean that therefore we should necessarily increase it. Arjuna was trying to avoid increasing the misery, but Krishna explained to him that misery is there, we can't avoid that. So we have to act in a manner according to dharma. Now, of course, this was Arjuna's argument. Adharma bhivavat Krishna padushyanti kulastriyaha strishu dushtashu varshnaya jayate varna sankaraha. He said that there will be adharma by which the women will be unprotected. And therefore so many unwanted children will be born. So he was appealing to dharma. But Krishna explained to him there is a higher dharma. There's a higher understanding of dharma. That we cannot solve all the problems in this material world, because the nature of this material world is that it is problematic. There's no end to it. There's no end to the suffering in this material world, but there is an end, and that is, instead of trying to solve material problems by material means, we should come to the spiritual platform, which is beyond birth and death. The spiritual platform means acceptance of Krishna as the Supreme Personality of Godhead, surrender to Him, acting according to His desire, acting as his servant, which is the constitutional position of bliss for the jiva. So of course this is quite... Does this fan have any speed control? Could we turn this down? I'm getting a pain in my throat. So this is the real thing we should be looking for. We shouldn't be fooled by the propaganda of society. Not just now, but in all societies throughout time, that we can be happy in this material world. But the fever is more at the present time. The materialistic fever is very high all over the world, this idea that we shall make the world very nice, we shall all live here happily, but we're not going to live here. Build a nice house, you see people spend all their life, they get a house and then they spend their whole life paying for it, and then when they finish paying for it, they die. Or they think, I'll live happily in this house. There are so many things. Just recently in America, the property market prices crashed. So people are buying houses, a very high price, and then they're committing themselves to pay for it over 20, 25 years. And then just overnight the value changes to one third of what it was before, and then they're paying so much money for a house which isn't worth it. But they're bound. So these kind of things are going on. So what is the ultimate solution to all problems? To come to that state where there is no problem, no student problem, no married problem, no retired problem, no death problem. That is the state of Krishna consciousness, accepting Krishna as the ultimate reality. He is always happy. There's no unhappy Krishna. Krishna, his name means all attractive. He's always dancing, not this drunken dance or disco dance. But that is the ultimate level of artistic perfection, in which Krishna is dancing with the gopis, who are all expansions of Krishna's Hladini Shakti, his pleasure-giving potency. The gopis are all expansions of Krishna. They're all like Krishna, fully spiritual. There's no trace of mundane lust between Krishna and the gopis. But there is pure, unadulterated love by which the gopis are simply thinking how to give pleasure to Krishna, and Krishna is thinking how to give pleasure to the gopis. So that is the ultimate. Reality is dancing. Reality means to dance for Krishna, with Krishna. And reality is dancing. He is reality. Krishna is real. Everything in this world is unreal. Unreal in the sense that it has no permanent status. Everything in this world is temporary. We say, Mera Bharat Mahan, but there was no such country as Bharat before the British united it and then disunited it. And it won't last. The political boundaries, they're not going to stay the same forever. And then even the very land, just like this, Mangalore, this is all Parashuram Kshetra, this is created by Bhagavan Parashuram. Before that it didn't exist. And after some time it will cease to exist. If we go ahead in time, some thousands of years or lakhs of years or millions of years, this land won't exist. Or the whole material world will be destroyed. So nothing remains in this world. In that sense it is unreal. But reality is Krishna. Krishna remains throughout the creation and destruction of this material world. Krishna remains forever in his Gokul Dham. And he's forever dancing and inviting us to join him in his happy world. But we are here due to forgetfulness of Krishna. So the solution for that problem is to remember Krishna. It's a very simple thing, actually. But Maya is so strong that we think we can be happy without Krishna. But it won't happen. It never has happened in the history of the world, and it never will happen, because Ki Ami, who am I? The answer to that, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said, Jiva Swarup Hoy Krishna Nitya Das. Every living being is an eternal servant of Krishna. So without remembering Krishna, without serving Krishna, whatever we do, we cannot be happy. What would you like to do to be happy? I would like to have, what, a big house, lots of servants, lots of money. But there are so many people with big houses and lots of servants and lots of money. And They have a big sense of importance, but they're not happy. And even if they feel somewhat happy, they have to suffer. They have to die. That is the nature of this material world. So don't be fooled by the propaganda of modern society that we shall be happy by working hard, getting money, getting big houses and big cars, and you can sit in your big air-conditioned car in the traffic jam. Oh. Car means another headache always. You have to maintain it, and they it's another cheating. They build the cars like everything else, so deliberately, so that it won't last more than 4 or 5 years. Very well. And then you have to, then it's just, after that, half the time you're spending money for its repair, or you have to get a new one. They can build cars that will last very nicely all your life, but they won't. Because then they can't sell you a new one. So you pay for one car, and then you pay for another one, and you spend your whole life working for things which simply give us more and more anxiety. So our proposal is chant Hare Krishna. Remember Krishna. Understand that reality is to be with Krishna. That's all. Simple. Reality is not difficult to understand, but we find it difficult due to our material attachments. It seems real. If I don't work hard, how will I live in this world? What will I do? Well, we may think like that, but at the end of life, if we don't remember Krishna, then what is the use? So better to live our lives in such a way that we can cultivate remembrance of Krishna. For that, one has to take to the process of sadhana. Regularly chanting the holy names of Krishna, living life in a pure way, free from sinful activities. Unfortunately, in modern India, if we, people who want to stop eating meat, fish and eggs, onions, garlic, and taking tobacco and alcohol, who want to live a civilized life, people think there's something wrong with them. It's such a sad situation. We tend to believe whatever everyone else is doing, we think is right. Follow the fashion, that's all. But it's more intelligent to find out what is actually beneficial for us. So, we recommend you study Bhagavad Gita as it is, understand what is actually beneficial for us, chant Hare Krishna, understand Krishna, and prepare ourselves to be free from birth and death and from all sufferings in this material world, and go to Krishna, serve Krishna eternally, and dance with Krishna. Hare Krishna. Is there any question about this, please? No question. No one understood. Is it? No one understood, no one agreed, no one disagreed.
What is wrong in killing animals?
Oh, there's nothing wrong. You're an animal, I'll kill you too. How about that? Like the idea? What's the difference between a human and an animal? They eat, we eat. They sleep, we sleep, they have children, we have children, so I can kill you too, nothing wrong. Why? Would you like that I kill you? Not sure, you have to think about it. Is it? Well, the animals don't like that we kill them also. They also feel pain. Inflicting unnecessary suffering. Is that not wrong? It's not necessary to eat meat. There's propaganda that you become more strong by doing so. But it seems that more likely that you become more prone to get cancer and high blood pressure and all kinds of diseases by doing so. Otherwise, you know, the elephant's a vegetarian. Doesn't need to eat meat to become strong. It's a myth that you need to eat meat to become strong. And anyway, the purpose of life is not to have a big, strong body anyway. What's the use of a big, strong body and a stupid mind? No benefit. That's an elephant. Big, strong body and not very intelligent. The big, strong body becomes a weak body in due course of time. And then becomes a dead body. So better have a strong spiritual purpose. There's another question? What was that? I couldn't hear. What is the purpose of life? To become free from all suffering and happy forever. How about that? What do you think? Can anyone give a better purpose of life? Can anyone suggest any better purpose of life than becoming free from all suffering eternally and becoming fully happy forever? How to do it? Yes. Then you, first of all, we have to understand what is that situation? That is a spiritual situation, because any material situation means there is death, there is suffering. So the spiritual situation is one beyond birth and death. That we have to learn from Bhagavad Gita. That is in the service of Krishna. By serving Krishna, Krishna is blissful. Krishna does not die. So if we serve Krishna, we become blissful and we do not die. How to do it? Well, here's an introductory book which describes Beginner's Guide to Krishna Consciousness. You can ask devotees here also about all these. There are certain techniques which purify the consciousness, among which in Kali Yuga, the most important is chanting the names of Krishna. Everything we do, we should do for the purpose of purification. How in youth can we overcome lust, anger and greed? It's not only in youth. Old people also are full of lust, anger and greed. It's a myth to think that as you become older, you automatically become free from lust, anger and greed. It's not true. One has to cultivate higher qualities. Generally, we think older people are wiser, but older people become wiser by cultivating higher consciousness. If they don't cultivate higher consciousness, Hare Krishna, if they spend their whole life cultivating lust, anger, and greed, how can I get more money? And whatever spare time they have sitting in front of the TV, or reading newspapers, then they're not going to become free from that. Rather, it will increase by cultivating it. So instead of becoming old and wise, they become old fools. So it's not a question of in youth becoming free, but of course we should try in youth to become free. But throughout life we have to strive to become free from lust, anger and greed. It's true that at the present time, the advertising industry and all so many businesses are targeting youth because there's a large young population in India, or a large young population with money to spend, and they're easily misled. So the advertisements are targeting youth and promoting lust, anger and greed. TV means lust, anger and greed. What else is there on TV? They promote lust by showing all kinds of, you know, sexy programs and advertisements. And greed, buy this, buy that, buy everything else. And anger, violence. So that's TV and cinema. Lust, anger and greed. We can become free from lust, anger and greed by cultivating higher consciousness. Jahi Shatram Mahabaho Kama Rupa Durasadam. In Bhagavad Gita, Lord Krishna gives the formula for conquering over lust. And along with lust go all the other bad qualities. So the formula is that we should know who we are. We are spirit soul. We are part and parcel of Krishna. So cultivating that consciousness, Krishna consciousness, helps us to overcome lust, anger, and greed. But don't think it's going to take place in one day. It's not like instant coffee. One has to be patient.
If you do not work hard or do a job, then probably can survive in this day.
Well, I never did a job. I'm going on 50 years old. I get food every day. It's not easy to chant the name of God. Does anyone find any difficulty? Can everyone say Krishna? Please say
Krishna.
Is it difficult?
Not difficult, but we can't survive by the name of.
Really? Well, I'm not doing too bad. I've traveled around the world so many times.
You know, the people are busy working hard and doing their jobs.
Yeah.
So, yeah. Then we have to.
Why? That's the myth that they've propagated in modern society. Unless you work like an ass, you cannot survive. But in Bhagavad Gita, Lord Krishna says, Anad Bhavanti Bhutani. We live on food, not paper. Not paper money. Anad Bhavanti Bhutani. Where does the anna come from? Parjanyadana sambhavaha. That comes from rain. Then, yagyad bhavati parajanyo. By performing sacrifice comes rain, and yagya karma samudbhavaha. Yagya is possible to perform when we lead a pious life. So, it's not a fact that the rotten vegetables full of chemicals that you buy in the market come from factories. But rather, everything is provided. Everything in this world is provided by God. Before there were factories and colleges, dozens of engineering colleges and these mechanical airplanes and computers, people were living. They call that backward. That this modern society is backward because they promote all sinful activities. The air is poisonous to breathe. There's no such thing as drinking water, which is actually fresh and pleasant and unpolluted. The mind is polluted. People have no idea of the goal of life and they think it's advanced because we can go in a motor car. This is perverted thinking. Simple living and high thinking, that is actual human civilization. Modern civilization means people think they're very educated because they have a piece of paper from a college by which they can run from place to place like a dog and say, please give me something to eat. And we are brainwashed into thinking that unless we work hard, we cannot survive.
And what should be our main goal in the world, in our life?
Well, I mean, I just gave a whole lecture about it. If you couldn't pick it up from the lecture, what shall I say? What did I say? Can you remember?
But it's not true that by chanting the name of the Buddha is enlightened.
Well, I'm evidence. Yeah, here's something. Here's Guru Das's suggestion. Here's another lecture. Jivan Kadhyaya. A whole lecture. There's a picture there of, this is Amitabh Bachchan, that's Sachin Tendulkar. This is this, what's his name? Al, what's his name? Arnold Schwarzenegger, or whatever his name is. This is a happy family. And this is Bill Gates, and they're all wasting their lives.
And if it is not a myth, they're all stars, then what should
we... Oh, they're all stars, yeah. But they're all going to be dead soon, and then they're going to become cats and dogs. So, what's the benefit?
Then why should we listen to them?
That's what I'm saying. Listen to me, because I'm saying what Krishna says.
Krishna says, work hard.
Really?
You will get the fruit.
Really? Really? That's the whole message of Bhagavad Gita? You've studied Bhagavad Gita?
I have not studied.
No, so you don't know what Krishna says.
But
your parents are self-realized, they know better than Krishna? I don't think so. You can work hard, you do it. And you'll get repeated birth and death if you don't remember Krishna. You can go on working hard in 84 lakh species of life. You're welcome. I'll give you my blessing. You want to become a dog? No problem. You want to become a dog, a cat? You can do.
Is there an alternate path, like you work hard and at the same time,
the thing is, this working hard, it's like an intoxication. People go on working so many hours, and your mind is absorbed in that. But we will get free from birth and death if the mind is absorbed in Krishna, not if it's absorbed in work. Therefore, it is recommended yavan artha prayojanam. We should work as much as is required, as Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, sharira yatra pitate na prasidyate karmanaha. One requires to do some work to maintain the body. But Krishna doesn't say work three jobs, one in the morning, one in the evening, one at night, until you collapse with a heart attack. He doesn't say that. Work as is required, but the real purpose of life is to get free from repeated birth and death, which means to remember Krishna. Remember Krishna means we have to take time to do sadhana. Without doing sadhana, we won't remember Krishna. And if we don't remember Krishna, then we simply have to die and get born again. It's living in ignorance. That's all. Yeah. Sadhana means practice. Spiritual practice. Such as chanting the names of Krishna regularly, daily. That's the main sadhana in Kali Yuga. Sorry, I should have explained the word. People are doing sinful things. Yeah, in the modern world, sinful life is being promoted. Just like, for instance, I'll give an example. Now, Al Gore, he has a very good name, Gore. You've all heard of Al Gore. He was an American presidential candidate. His name is good, Gore, which means Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So he's recently become famous for his explaining about all the dangers of pollution and how we have to become more ecologically aware and use less water and use these kind of bulbs instead of the other kind of bulbs. And people are praising him. The Well, this is very good. But what he doesn't say is that the meat industry is more polluting than all these things put together. That by taking one hamburger, which in America people eat hamburgers, it's got maybe a quarter pound of meat in it, then that pollutes more than using a bulb for like 6 months. One meal which they take in 5 minutes. But he didn't say that, because they don't want to go against the meat industry, because it's a multi-billion dollar industry. Jimmy Carter, maybe you heard his name, the peanut farmer who became the president of America. He made dozens of political mistakes. One of them was that for one day at the White House, he observed Vegetarian Day. Then he was finished. Because the whole meat industry turned against him, and they've got billions of dollars. So they're promoting, eat meat. It's being promoted, isn't it? Eat meat, drink alcohol. How many advertisements are there all over the place for drinking alcohol? Now, does it benefit anyone by drinking alcohol? Does anyone get any benefit? Well, the only benefit is to the owner of the whiskey companies or beer companies. Otherwise, it's very bad for their health. It's very dangerous. Drinking and driving is very dangerous. Or so many murders are committed by drunken people. So much violence. There's no benefit to human society, but they're promoting it because some people make lots of money. That's all. So just see, people are being misled. It's cheating on a massive scale. So we're recommending lead a pure life and get free from birth and death by chanting the names of Krishna. Now also they're promoting boyfriend, girlfriend, love affair, this, that, but that also just, it simply leads to so much suffering. In the movies they show, oh, very nice, very happy, but actually it's just a disturbance to the mind. The old system was better. The parents arrange the marriage, and they agree to live together responsibly in a civilized manner, and they go on with life. But nowadays, because the idea, instead of thinking that marriage is joining together for the sake of dharma, to live responsibly and worship God, they think just how I can enjoy. Everyone from the beginning of life is simply, how can I enjoy? So even socially it's not good. No one cares for their elder parents. People don't even care for their children. There are so many. The great heroes of modern society, Mick Jagger. Who's heard of Mick Jagger? Who's unfortunate enough to have heard of Mick Jagger? You've heard of him? Famous rock star. So he's had so many children by so many women, and he's like a hero of the modern world. That's a normal thing. But that's not... Of course, if someone has many children, they may have many wives, and they look after them, and that's one thing. But just, you have a girlfriend, she gets pregnant, and then, okay, forget you, and go on to the next one. This irresponsible life is causing so many problems in human society, but they're promoting it. Because if people become more and more adharmic, then they can sell their products more easily. People become more and more foolish. Who will buy whiskey when it just gives you a headache? But they're promoting, it's very nice, it's very good, and therefore people are buying it. Coca-Cola, if Coca-Cola was sitting in the shop, or Pepsi-Cola, they're both in India, right? Isn't it? I don't know. I suppose so. If it was just sitting in the shop and they never advertised it, would anyone ever buy it? No, because there's no need for it. There's no need, and as far as I can remember, like 35 years ago when I last took one, it doesn't taste that good anyway. It has no nutritional value whatsoever. No one, but they have multi-billion-dollar advertising industry. And therefore they make so much profit. Which just goes to show how foolish people are. Because by spending billions of dollars, they make billions of dollars selling things to people which are completely useless for them. Coca-Cola is completely useless. It has no benefit to you whatsoever. But people buy it because of advertisements. So we are suggesting that don't be fooled by modern society. It's just cheating you in all respects. So that you think, I have to work hard, otherwise I can't live. But wait a minute, people have been living for generally, you know, thousands of years without working in factories and offices and oil rigs, and people were living. And actually they were much more healthy in many ways, more than now. That's another bluff. They say that they've discovered so many cures, they brought out so many vaccines which have cured so many diseases. But if you see the statistics, these vaccines came out when the disease rates were already falling, in all cases. So, in course of time, the disease goes down. And then anyway, just like tuberculosis has come up again. They said they eradicated it, but now it's come again. We're not in control. There's this bluff that modern science puts man in control, but there's no control. We can't stop death. When the tsunami comes, you can't stop it. When the cyclone comes, you can't stop it. Or if there's going to be a drought, then what will you do? They can't artificially pour rain from the sky. So we are controlled. That is the first principle of theism, to understand we are controlled. It's a great bluff of modern society. That man is the controller. We're not the controller. And there's this idea that you are free. You are young, you are free. You're not free at all. You're psychologically controlled. As an example, Coca-Cola. You're psychologically controlled. And you're brainwashed into thinking that you have to work far harder than a donkey would agree to just to live. You're all cheated. You're all bluffed. And proud of it too. Oh, I'm an MSc. That means you've got a certificate to work. You worked hard, and now that's a certificate you can take to work hard all your life. And at the end, death, that's all. And then you become a dog or a cat. So, what's the benefit? And people think this is advancement. This is cheating on top of cheating. That they become proud. I'm so advanced. And keep a dog is another sign of modern life. You should have some expensive dog. You have to pay so much money for a dog who keeps you awake all night by barking. Prove. What would you consider to be proof? You think that everything should be proved. How can you prove that there are subatomic particles? Would you consider that's a proved fact, that there are subatomic particles? You would consider that a proved fact? Well, that you consider it's a proved fact. Okay. So what's the proof? Has anyone ever seen subatomic particles? No, you're not seen. So why do you accept that it's a proven fact? Because certain scientists say so and you believe them, right? Practically, that's why you accept it. All right, so we can give proof, but you have to be trained to understand it. Even if a scientist came an atomic physicist came and gave the proof, all the mathematical formulae, would you understand it? No. You have to be trained, then you can understand. And the more subtle anything is, the more complex the proof is. So the existence of the soul is more subtle than the existence of subatomic particles. We can prove it, but you have to be trained. Actually, it's not such a difficult thing to understand. Where are you from? Ranchi. Ranchi, okay. So in Ranchi, people speak Hindi, mostly, is it? Not Jharkhandi. In the villages, they speak Jharkhandi, presumably. So in Hindi, when someone dies, they say, oh, cholega. Aise bolte hain, eh? So, in Bengali, they say, chale geche. In English, they say, he's gone away. In Canada, what do they say? When someone dies, he's gone away? Satto hodu, something like that. Hodu, hodu. So who went and where did they go? The body's there. Why is it that in every language of the world, when someone dies, they say he's gone away? Why? The same body is there. That means that, this is not proof, but it's, well, it's one kind of proof. It's by inference. That if all over the world people say he has gone away, that means that intuitively we understand that the body and the person are different and that the soul which was giving life to the body has gone away. Now, if the body is the living being, then when someone dies, we should be able to do some kind of electric shock or injection or something to bring them back to life, if it's only a material change. If the body is all in all, then we should be able to do something to reverse whatever changes. If death is just a material change, then we should be able to reverse that. Or if we say it's an irreversible reaction, then we should find out what is the irreversible biochemical reactions that we call death and make some mechanism to stop that. Why is it that there are so many universities all over the world with so many research departments to stop cancer, to stop AIDS, and stop so many diseases? There's no research department to stop death. Why is that? If it's only a material, what's the answer? Okay. Well, I'm still. So, intrinsically, we understand that death is unstoppable. If it's only a material change, then we should be able to stop it. Intuitively, we all understand that there is the soul which is different from the body, and that's why we say, chalega. Chalega kya matlab ho, wapas nahi aayega. So as long as wo abhi tak idhar hi hai, to nahi gaya. So that long we're trying to keep alive, we're giving water, we're talking, we're kissing, embracing, as soon as the day is finished. The body, as long as the soul is there, if you burn it, if you put the body on a fire, it becomes a crime. As soon as it dies, if you don't put it on a fire soon, that's a crime. Right? If you keep a dead body 3 days, 4 days, 5 days, the neighbors will call the police. Take it out. And they say, well, how can I burn my father? I can't put, he's gone. He's gone. So intuitively we all understand it, actually. There's another example Krishna gives in Bhagavad Gita that can help us to understand that a young child changes to become a young adult, then middle-aged adult, then old. Now, the bodies change, right? All the cells are changing all the time. So the body of the 70-year-old is not the same as the body of the 7-year-old, but it's the same person. What has remained the same? The principle of sameness is the soul. That stays the same. And when the body dies, it's another transformation. There's transformation from boyhood to youth to old age, and then death is another transformation. Apart from that, if you want what you consider scientific or empiric proof, there's lots of it, actually. There was one psychologist from Australia, Ian Stevenson, Dr. Ian Stevenson. He died this year or last year. He spent his whole life doing research on reincarnation because he found that several of his patients, they were recalling experiences from previous lives. So he did a lot of investigation into it. And he found what would, by any scientific means, be considered proof that people who, they'd enter a trance-like state and start talking in a forgotten language 200 years old. Some language which no one speaks anymore, or some dialect, this kind of thing. So there is proof, but mostly people don't want to accept it because they don't want to accept spiritual reality. Otherwise, it's not a difficult thing to accept. We have that book coming back. There's some discussion of that in one book we have called Coming Back, The Science of Reincarnation. You can read that. Again, what do you consider proof? The proof of the existence of God. What do you mean by proof? First of all, they have to say, if you don't want to accept, then nothing will be proof. You see, if we say even in what they call science, empiric proof, we have to accept some axioms. You know what an axiom is? It means something that we all accept as self-evidently true. Now, just like you may want to prove that the sky is blue. Okay. So, we walk out in the morning and we see it's blue. But someone else says, no, it's red. Everyone else says blue, but he says red. So then we would say, if 200 people all say it's blue, and one says, I see it's red, then we either think that he's stupid, or he's lying, or that he has some visionary defect. And here's the book, Coming Back, The Science of Reincarnation. So there, just like, yeah, 1 + 1 = 2. We all accept. Generally in scientific proof, they want to use mathematics, isn't it, for so many. Now if someone says, well, there might be some case where 1 + 1 doesn't = 2. Or we want to, all people are born from a father and a mother. And someone might say, well, maybe there's someone who isn't. Actually, in Shastra, there are instances. Brahma was born directly from Narayan. But generally in human society, a human being is born from a mother and father. So if someone argues, then, no, I don't accept that. Then the point is, you can go on arguing forever. But someone who is reasonable will accept some reasonable arguments. So, if we say we accept, what is the proof of God? Well, first of all, what would you accept as proof? Now some may say, well, you have to show me God. But then you may not recognize, even if we show this is God, unless you're trained, you may not recognize. Just like that example of subatomic particles. An atomic physicist may give the proof, theoretical and some experiment. But unless you're trained, you can't recognize. You may say, well, I didn't see any subatomic particles. One who's trained can recognize it. One who's not trained, they see, but they don't understand. So seeing God is not just a matter of seeing with the retina, but it means being trained to understand the phenomena you see. You understand? So that may require some training to understand, but basically we can all understand the point that we are controlled. We are not independent. We may think I am free, but we're not. We are forced to die. We are forced to grow old. So we are under control of power, some power that is higher than us. When we accept that that power is under the control of the powerful, as we always say, any power, electric power, any power that human beings have harnessed, put it somewhere else so it doesn't fall down, is under the control of someone. So the controller of all power is God. People may say, well, I don't see, so I don't believe. You can just tell them, then you're a fool. That's all. Because there are so many energies which may be existing, which we don't see or we don't understand. That doesn't mean they don't exist. Just like radio waves existed before they were discovered. That didn't mean they didn't exist. So someone may say, well, when electricity was first expostulated in the modern world. Actually, all these things are described in the Vedic literatures long before they so-called discovered them. But someone, when it's first expostulated that there's electricity, you say, well, I don't believe in that. You don't believe means you don't understand. But that doesn't mean it doesn't exist. That's your foolishness, that's all. It's the same, just like so many things, electricity, radioactivity, magnetic waves, all these things. You believe in them because you believe scientists, that's all. You don't know. You say it's proven. You don't know what the proof is. You just presume that the scientists, what they're saying is true. And they, you say it's proven because they say it's proven, but you don't know. It's just a matter of faith, that's all. You believe the scientists, and for your information, the scientists are changing their theories all the time. A few years ago in a magazine I read that among astrophysicists there are more than 2,000 theories about the origin of the universe. And how many astrophysicists are there in the world? Probably not more than 2,000 anyway. It means they don't know, actually. They say there are so many theories. It just means they don't know, that's all. They won't say they don't know. They say there are so many theories. Sounds very intelligent, but what it means is that they don't know. They're in ignorance. That's all. And we're bluffed and we think, oh, they're very intelligent. They're making so many theories. Well, we have knowledge, actually. We know. Aham sarvasya prabhavo matas sarvam pravartate. This is the statement of Lord Krishna in Bhagavad Gita. He creates the universe. So, we believe it. And you believe the astrophysicist. Who doesn't know? We believe Krishna. Like I say, so many people come and go. Einstein came, Einstein went. And so many people come and go, but Krishna remains. There are so many theories. There's no God in control. It's nothing new. Don't think it's a new theory. In Bhagavad Gita, Lord Krishna, speaking about the asuras or the demons, he says, asatyam apratishtante jagad ahur anishvara. Demoniac people say that there is no cause of the manifestation. There's no controller in the universe. It's not a new theory. Hare Krishna. You wanted, who is that? Someone wanted to say? No? Alright. Now you're looking away. You were going to say something. Alright, don't say. Doesn't matter. Yeah. He doesn't want to say himself? Plants? Yeah, we also eat. But that doesn't cause as much suffering as killing animals, because their consciousness is much less developed. Another thing is that much vegetarian food does not involve killing. When we eat grains like rice and ragi and wheat, it doesn't involve killing. They're harvested after the plant dies. You know that? You have any idea about that? Have you ever seen the rice fields, when they become yellow, they cut it? Yellow means already dying. So that doesn't involve killing. Taking fruit from the tree does not involve killing. Taking milk does not involve killing. And even the killing that may be there, that causes a lot less suffering than it does slitting the throat of an animal. But it's true, that's also sinful, because anything we do in this world, if it's not done for the sake of Krishna, is sinful. But there are degrees. Therefore, we don't take vegetarian food, we take Krishna prasad, food that's offered to Krishna, that's free from sin. All sin. We have a book about that too. We have that, Higher Taste. Yeah, so that is elaborately answered in the book, The Higher Taste. Spiritual vegetarianism. We're not simply vegetarians. Spiritual vegetarianism. Higher than vegetarianism. That was just discussed. That some killing is involved. Shall I say it again? Some plant life is killed for the sake of food, which is also sinful, but it's not so sinful as killing animals, because the consciousness within the plant is very highly covered compared to that of the animal, which suffers severely. Did you ever kill a chicken, wring its throat, cut the neck of a goat? Ever did that? No. You like to do it? No. Well, they won't like if you do it either. But it's being done. Must be a few million chickens are killed every day in India alone, isn't it? How many people are eating chicken every day? What's the population of India now in millions? It's 1,100 million, something like that, isn't it? How many? 11 crore? 110? So, if 1 in 100 people eats a chicken per day, it's probably more than that, then that's, you know. At least, you know, some lakhs of chickens are being killed every day. So that's sinful. But if we offer the vegetarian food to Krishna, then it becomes free from all sin. Yeah. In Bhagavad Gita, is it mentioned that killing animals is a sin? Not specifically, but it's said that any eating any food which is not offered in sacrifice is sinful. Lord Krishna also states, Patrang Pushpang Palantayam, that food should be offered to me, which is from fruit, leaf, flower, and water. He also mentions three kinds of food, Ahara Tamasa, food which is rotten, is in the mode of ignorance. The three kinds of food. In other scriptures we'll find, Manu, for instance, describes. He says that eating fish is the most sinful. Or it's the lowest. One who eats fish eats all kinds of meat. Anyway, our main thing is not campaigning for vegetarianism. We say, worship Krishna. Take nice Krishna prasad. You'll be happy. You'll be healthy. Then automatically you won't want to. If our consciousness comes to the higher level of wanting to serve Krishna, then automatically we won't think to eat nasty things. Won't be attracted, yeah. How did I join? That is due to the mercy of Srila Prabhupada, whose book I read. I came to the temple and I saw that the devotees in the temple, they're just completely different to materialistic people. Their goal of life is completely different. And the philosophy they spoke was perfect. So I had no choice. What they said made sense.